You're listening to the Connecting Industry Podcast, brought to you by Resource Industry Media. You can find out more about the resource and construction industry, including how to communicate consciously with your stakeholders at resourceindustrymedia.com.au.
Welcome to the Connecting Industry Podcast, brought to you by Resource Industry Media. I'm Kieran Moran, Managing Director of Resource Industry Media. The Connecting Industry Podcast series is designed to tell the stories of the people who work in the resource and construction sector throughout Queensland and Australia. It's our goal for these podcasts to not only keep you up to date with the latest resource and construction news, information and procurement opportunities, but most importantly, build relationships between you and our guests so you can connect with their stories and get a better understanding of how to communicate and tell your business story right. On this week's Connecting Industry Podcast, we have Paul Hodgson, East Coast General Manager, Innovation and Stakeholder Engagement for the National Energy Resources Australia Industry, or NERA as it is known. Paul works with stakeholders to increase productivity, competitiveness and export potential of the energy resources sector, and most recently, he has been leading the establishment of Australia's National Hydrogen Technology Cluster Network, including a funding program for regional clusters across Australia. Welcome to the podcast, Paul.
Thanks, Kieran. Great to be on.
And it's great to have you, Paul. And you're actually an extremely busy man, aren't you, with NERA at the moment, especially with the some of the hydrogen clusters that you're pulling together.
Yes, look, a really busy time, but a really quite a satisfying time, seeing the interest and the excitement that's sort of built across the country from all regions, really, about the potential to grab a slice of the global hydrogen economy.
So before we do get into that, just a little bit about yourself. How did you get into not just the work with NERA, but some of the progression up to where you are now?
I've had quite a mixed career, Kieran. I started as a graduate economist in the Department of Primary Industries and Energy back in the early 90s, and have worked in sort of the innovation, R&D, commercialization, sustainability, clean tech, industry development, economic development, ministerial advisory, business advisory space, pretty much since then. So I've worked principally out of Queensland, but usually with a globally focused role. I've worked all three levels of government, my own consulting business, big consulting businesses, training and skills agencies, all sorts of things. So we could probably, but it sort of led me to where I am now with NERA, or have been for the last 3.5 years.
So what actually inspires you there? So a lot of what you do is really inspiring sort of a lot of other people, but also in the industry, you're creating a lot as well and looking at innovation as well. So what inspires you to move in those sort of directions?
I think what really inspires me is people wanting to be better, to improve, to create a vision and really go after it. I love ambition. I look for a glint in the eye, and you build a network of those people. I really love to back ambition. So where people are really excited about doing something, they want to get behind it. It's really easy to help support it. And so, I've sort of got to the stage where I've sort of consider myself a serial entrepreneur. I love going from organization to organization and kind of helping transform and kind of, lift the vision, create something, ambitious and then potentially move on to my next opportunity.
So what is one of those, if you can remember, what is one of those companies or businesses that you have worked with that have had that innovative idea, and you don't have to name them, but unless you can, of course, but that have actually taken that forward and have been extremely successful? What's one of the ones that you remember fondly?
Well, I think it's, and it's not necessarily an idea. It's often an approach of doing things. So I remember being back in the federal government in the late 90s working in the innovation and sort of R&D and commercialization assistance space, and really, at the time we had a very product-driven approach nationally, and we brought in a much more customer-focused approach, and I did a lot of evidence-based work to really push the agency into regions, because what we found from analysing the statistics was that regions were missing out on a lot of the assistance. The assistance was crowded around where the offices were, and so getting regional managers out into regions was and that network still exists today. But you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be a mind-blowing kind of thing. It's often just a way of looking at it. I worked for as an economic development manager for a local council, and kind of helped them separate out the local economic development from the global economic development to really help them nail what the key specializations for their region were. But when you're looking at global growth, it's almost becomes unlimited. If you're looking at local economic development growth, that is the amount of money being spent by local residents and local businesses, then it's going to be capped. So really what you want to be doing is chasing the real global specializations that you have. So sometimes it's just it's a way of thinking, a way of looking at the challenge and the opportunity, and that can often bring a lot of energy and motivation with it.
Well, you are based in Brisbane, but you do a work, as you said there, a lot of work around the regions. Predominantly, you're on the East Coast. But I suppose I'm interested to know just how it has sort of changed a little bit over that time where you have, like you said there, with the, I think it was the federal government you mentioned with the program there and stretching out to the regions. What value has the regions got, I suppose, in relation to competitiveness with the metropolitan regions?
A huge, huge competitiveness opportunities for regions. And, you know, if we look at the energy sector, the regions and, you know, just looking at the East Coast, so looking at places like the Bowen Basin, the Surat Basin, you know, so Central Queensland, Southern Queensland, looking at the Hunter region, looking at around Wollongong and the Illawarra, looking at the Latrobe Valley. I mean, people have said to me, so where are the new energy regions? And I've said, well, funny enough, they look like the old energy regions. And it, you know, you've only got to look at the availability of land, a skilled workforce, some fantastic local engineering capability, lots of infrastructure, including port infrastructure and pipelines and transmission and distribution networks for electricity, et cetera, et cetera. And you kind of go, these regions are, you know, they're kind of absolutely huge potential from an economic perspective.
So what is NERA?
So NERA is one of six industry growth centres that were established by the federal government 5 or 6 years ago now. And the idea is really that, you know, Australia's 25 million people in a world of 7.5 billion people. We're about 3% of the world economy. If we can focus on our national strategic competitive advantages and really drive innovation and collaboration within Australia, we could see fantastic levels of growth across those industry growth centres, or those priority sectors that are attached to industry growth centres. So our sector of energy resources is a significant contributor already to Australia, but we see huge potential to extend that, and extending that through the supply chain. So we've picked up funding from other states and territories. We've also matched funding from universities and industry. But predominantly it was a federal government initiative, although we're a public company limited by guarantees, so we're actually a separate entity for government.
So what are some of the main issues that you do see across Australia, but also the regions as well, some of the main issues that NERA needs to recognise as some of those areas that industry, the resources sector and so forth, energy resources sector, of what they need more of or can do things better?
I think, you know, predominantly, and this has been a challenge in Australia, that we've had a lot of debates about climate change and about the energy transition and about different energy and fuel sources. I think what we're seeing is a shift from a much more simple, perhaps, energy system to a much more diverse and much more complex energy system. And what that means for somewhere like Australia is the conversations are really not so necessarily about transition, and particularly for the regions, they're about diversification. So it's not necessarily about we need to stop doing something, we need to start doing something else. It's actually about we can actually provide more of this. So if we look across the energy space, just predominantly in Australia. We hold all the aces, right? So we've got battery minerals, we've got rare earths for all the electric vehicles and the battery manufacturing and a lot of the renewables infrastructure. But we've also, you know, world leaders in coal, in LNG, in uranium, and we've got some of the world's best solar intensity for renewable generation, got great wind, tidal, biomass, wave. So in some ways, we're sort of sitting in a position where with the world demanding more energy, then Australia is in a great position to be actually expanding its energy footprint and helping the world decarbonize at the same time because of a lot of the technologies and a lot of the energy sources we've got here. So it's a great, and regions are really where a lot of that's happening. A lot of the renewable generation, a lot of the existing electricity and gas generation, for example, is happening in the regions. So the regions is really where a lot of this this is happening. The key thing then, Kieran, is how do the regions capitalize on that? So how do they not end up with a few construction projects that bring in technology, bring in skills, and bring in capital from somewhere else and provide an economic spike, but how do they actually grow their region to have a whole bunch of research happening, training happening, startups, scale-ups, SMEs, large contractors, operators, all actually working in that region over the long term to service not just a local industry, but to also service the global industry?
Okay, then. In relation to, I suppose, climate change, and as we are moving towards cleaner energy fuels and so forth, I suspect that you would be across a lot of that sector and so forth. And now the federal government does cop criticism with it, and I suppose any government across the world would cop criticism in relation to the transitional change. But what are you seeing at the moment yourself on the ground?
What I'm seeing is a real shift and some interesting new relationships being formed. I'm seeing big energy intensive users looking to how they can reduce their emissions. We're seeing a lot of targets for net zero by 2050 or 2060 or even earlier than that by major companies, by major markets. So we're seeing a shift of a mix. And if you look at a big company, it's not hard to sort of go, well, I'm a coal company or I'm a gas company or I'm a power company. But to actually go, I'm an energy company or I'm an energy technologies company or actually I'm even just a technologies company. And so you're starting to see this kind of blurring of boundaries between different different companies and different fuel sources and different power and different technologies. And you're seeing some really interesting work happening to look at how a company can continue its own sustainability, because obviously products and services, technologies change over time. And if you want to stay around for the long haul, you might not just grab onto the one product that you've had for the last 30 or 40 years. You'll always be looking to innovate and to meet and to create something that excites the customer.
Okay, and part of that transition, of course, is an area that you are working in, and that's the hydrogen industry. The development of the hydrogen industry, I should say. But currently, NERA, you're part of establishing Australia's National Hydrogen Technology Cluster. Give us a little bit of information about that.
Okay, thanks, Kieran. So in the National Hydrogen Strategy back in November 2019, NERA was named as developing a national hydrogen technology cluster. We did a lot of work. We went to different regions early in 2020, went to 11 different regions and engaged stakeholders in how we build this up. About September last year, we decided to put out a regional cluster funding initiative to actually do some bottom-up development of a national hydrogen cluster and actually turn it into a national hydrogen cluster network. Had fantastic response. We had 58 applications from across the country, and with the help of some states and territories and some matching funding from industry and universities, we were able to put together almost $2 million of funding to fund an initial 13 clusters into the network. The important thing I think it's worth you know, reinforcing again is that if hydrogen becomes a massive global sector, there's a really good chance that Australia would be a big producer and exporter of hydrogen. We've got a lot of the conditions, a lot of the resources to actually do really big commodity-based exports. What isn't necessarily always so clear is, as I was saying before, is how do you build up the service sector? So the idea of the cluster network is not necessarily about the technologies, it's not necessarily about production of large-scale hydrogen. It's actually about all the participants and all the intellectual property and all the know-how and how we can actually scale and replicate that out of Australia to deliver the high-value jobs, revenue and exports that will sit alongside a production and export industry for hydrogen.
I remember a couple of years ago and I was speaking to the chief scientist for Queensland, and at that time he was saying the time frame would roughly be 20 to 30 years until it becomes a fully viable industry. And then we had the Premier as well around that time saying around about 15 years. And the only reason I use that as an example is the hydrogen industry. There's a lot of hype around it and so forth. There's also a little bit of criticism. But of course, and it's just like any new industry, you got the unknowns. You got the people who believe in it and people who don't believe in it. And as I just said, you get that with nearly any. LNG was a classic one that was first coming into Australia. And now we're talking about hydrogen and so forth. But what is the reality? So it's even to the point of, and not that you would know this, but because I liked what you did say there in relation to developing up in a way the supply chain to be a part of this. And so it's not about big hydrogen facilities or anything like that. It's more developing people to be ready for when it does come along. But what do you see in relation to the reality of hydrogen and where it is moving and, you know, as a viable industry for Australia?
Look, it's a really great question, Kieran, and I think it's important to reinforce the fact that hydrogen is no silver bullet for decarbonisation. It's not necessarily going to be the one thing. I often point to the International Energy Agency last year put out a energy perspectives report. They're tracking 800 different technologies and sources of energy, and how they may grow as we head to sort of a net zero emissions future sometime in the middle of this century. And it's interesting because hydrogen really isn't an energy source in itself. It's a carrier of energy. And what has really pushed the hydrogen sector has been major customers such as Japan pushing it. So a market pull for hydrogen rather than a technology push. And what hydrogen, its big opportunity is to really unlock a lot of the renewables generation that we've got. So we've got, for example, huge amounts of solar intensity. But a lot of where that is not necessarily in the places where the energy is going to get used. And it's also not necessarily being generated at times where we want the energy as well. So it's a time and a place shifting. So hydrogen's got an opportunity to do that. Batteries have obviously got an opportunity. I see a future where there will be multiple different technologies in different applications and potentially in different regions, depending on their resources and their needs. So I think what we'll see is that hydrogen will take a part of the energy mix in the future. Battery, you know, electric vehicles, for example, or large-scale grid batteries will also make a big difference and have a big part of that. So the timing is really interesting. I think it'll happen earlier rather than later if we can scale up the supply chain and we can drive down the costs so that it's not so expensive to convert to hydrogen. The world's really looking for decarbonising hard-to-decarbonise sectors like industrial and transport, and hydrogen has got an opportunity over those which, if they can get the cost down, would open up the market. So it's a little bit of a chicken and egg at the moment, Kieran.
I suspect that a lot of regions, you must have a little bit of fun out there, Paul, in a way, and a respectful fun in that. What I mean is because you have got a lot of areas, like you said, you're working down the East Coast, and so, you know, from North Queensland all the way down to New South Wales and so forth, and some of the clusters that are starting to be created, and some of the money that has just started to be put out into those clusters. Do you find it interesting in relation to every region in a way is fighting to be that cluster? What do you have to deal with there, and how do you, and when I said funny, it's not sort of funny, ha-ha, but it's the competitiveness of the regions to become those clusters?
Yeah, great question. And, you know, this is such a big opportunity for Australia that, you know, there is opportunity for lots of different regions to play a role. And so one of the key things we've done through building the National Cluster Network and even funding the regional clusters is to be as inclusive and as collaborative as we can. We really want to build a national picture that's not about internal competition within Australia. We want to kind of drive that level of collaboration because we think Australia as a whole has got a tremendous opportunity, but we need to grow the size of that opportunity together. If we start fighting over a very small opportunity, we're actually going to, I think, reduce the opportunity for us to grow that. Now, you know, really interesting in different regions, you know, it's not always about the technology, it's not always about the infrastructure, it's not even always about the projects that are coming. Regions is very much about what's the local leadership. Are they, you know, are they being ambitious? Are they being courageous? Are they being bold? Are they being welcoming? Are they really driving that, or are they kind of sitting back and they're waiting for the big projects to come? And so it's more that variability, I think, you see across the country of some regions going, well, it's just going to happen, so we'll just wait. And they may get the construction projects, but they may find that the people are flying in from another region, the technology is coming from another region, and even the capital might be coming from other regions or from overseas as well. So there is a very variability, but we really want to try and drive some learnings and knowledge and market intelligence and supply chain aggregation across the regions as well. So this is certainly is not about pitting one region against the other. It's about how they can all find their strengths within a national network.
And I think that's exactly true, where you said in relation to learning, it's at the moment everybody's learning the hydrogen industry, and there's a number of different forms within that, and you know, and that's across from government to the you know, within the public sector, and also across to the private sector as well, and down through the supply chain of understanding what it is, how it works, the different types, and seeing how they can get onto that and take advantage of it. But at the moment it's really a major learning process, so that's one of the main points that I see at the moment. Well, anyway, Paul, we're actually at the end of the podcast. It goes very quick, and I'll just like to say thank you very much for joining us. But how can people get in contact with NERA?
So probably the best thing is to head to the NERA website, which is just NERA, nera.org.au, or you can find NERA on LinkedIn or Twitter, and you can follow what we're doing. Always happy to connect with people or to help people with introductions or connections as well. That's a key part of the facilitation role we play. But look, thank you very much, Kieran. It's been a pleasure talking to you today. And yes, the time did go very quickly. We could talk about the energy sector and regions and regional development for a lot longer.
We certainly could. Thank you very much for joining us, Paul.
Thanks a lot, Kieran.
You've been listening to the Connecting Industry Podcast interview series with Kieran Moran from Resource Industry Media. To find out more about the resource and construction industry, including past podcasts, news and events, go to resourceindustrymedia.com.au.